The views and opinions expressed by John and DJ do not reflect those of any intelligent or rational human being and are solely the property of the Brightside Chat.
Hey, welcome back to the Brightside. This week, John comes to me. We are on location at a different comic book store, and my favorite part of this podcast is listening to John and Slade. Their information, their knowledge is unbelievable. Love listening to them. Can't wait for you guys to hear it. At the end, please listen to how you could save money. Let's support our comic book stores because they're so much fun to hang out in. Now let's get in there.
Hey, DJ. How's it going, man? I almost didn't see you sitting back there.
Back there? I'm right in the front of the store. You walked right by me twice.
All this good stuff to look at, it had my attention. So...
Welcome to Friendly Neighborhood Comics.
Here, I'm not used to being inside a comic book store.
Well, we're here at Friendly Neighborhood Comics in Bellingham, Mass. John flew in tonight, special for this. Go ahead.
Boy, am I arms
there
tired.
There we go. I've been waiting all...
You knew that was coming. You queued me up for
yeah,
that.
I've been waiting all week for that one. So... Not only are we at Friendly Neighborhood Comics, not only is it Batman Detective Comics 1000 tonight, but we also, this is our 25th issue.
Screw Detective, that's a milestone.
That's exactly, that's it's huge. So
who needs 80 years when you have 25 weeks?
25 issues. So my question to you, I've been waiting like 6 weeks for this. Do we go back to issue one? Do we keep going? Do we pull a Marvel and reboot?
Yeah. It's time to relaunch our universe.
Yeah. So, nope. Yep. 25. Here we are. And it's pretty fun that everything fell tonight, Detective 1000. How was it at your store today before you flew up here? Anybody interested in it tomorrow? Is it a big push?
Well, yeah. I mean, today was just a normal Tuesday because, you know, the books don't really come out till tomorrow. You know, I was pre-selling for a couple of weeks, you know, to try to get some excitement going for this book. And, you know, I think it's going to be a good release. I'm a little, at this point, I don't think I have enough stock left over after filling all of my subscribers to have, you know, to really have a great presentation out on the shelf. I wish I had ordered a little heavier, but you know, we talked before and pre-orders for this weren't as high as they were for Action 1000, so I went a little bit conservative. You know, I'll have about 3 to 4 copies of every cover on the shelf tomorrow.
Oh, nice. That's still pretty good. All the covers they have.
Well, I mean, that's 33 books or so.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's still a lot, but you know, anybody, you know, that only services a couple of people if they actually want to come in and pick up the whole, you know, the whole 10
yeah.
issue.
Yeah.
You know, the whole 10 issue run.
We've got the Midnight cover here, which is pretty cool. I don't know if you, have you seen that one?
I do, yeah, I have them.
Oh, okay.
I signed up for the party as well. I just am not doing it.
Well, you had
release.
To be here.
That's right. I didn't have anybody to man the store, so. But yeah, I have the Midnight release covers as well.
Cool.
So
yeah, they're pretty nice. Pretty nice. It's the it's basically the wraparound cover.
Yeah.
Just all on the cover, sideways. Yeah. So. Yeah. That's pretty cool. So how many pre-order people did you get total? Do you know? Do you remember?
Oh, well, I probably got, I mean, if I have, guessing, 35 copies left for the shelf, I got over 100, 110 in today total, probably. So, I mean, 2/3 of what I ordered went to pre-orders. It's only a couple of people got the entire
right
13 cover. I think it's 13 covers altogether when you include the blank cover the regular cover and the Midnight cover, but most people didn't get all of them, but I had a few people that got, you know, 3 or 4 different covers. A lot of them just picked out 1 or 2 that they liked. But like I said, I pre-sold probably 65, 70 copies.
And how does that compare? Like, so. And what'd you do for the Superman, the action comics?
Oh, I probably sold another 40 copies on top of that, probably.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's pretty big.
I had several people. I had multiple people buying the whole 10 issue.
Right.
Or 11. Not issue, covers really is what we should be saying. It's not issues. But,
right.
But I had multiple people buy all the covers. Plus, what I didn't do this time around, I did last time is I pre-sold on eBay as well. And I sold, multiple sets on eBay. Then it just ended up being more trouble than it was worth, though, with the shipping and the packing and all that stuff. So I elected not to do that this time. You know, it's a lot more work for not really making a whole lot of money. So
yeah,
I'd rather just sell the copies in store for this one, because a pound of a foot worth of books, is $15 to ship.
Right.
So it ended up being, like I said, more trouble than it was worth. So
that's cool. Yeah.
But definitely, not to diminish, because we're here to talk about Detective. But I mean, definitely being the first book to 1,000, it benefited Action a little bit more than it did for Detective.
Yeah.
Even though it's a huge milestone, they're not the first one to get there now. So.
Yeah. Well, up here, I mean.
So yeah, you're so. While we're both sitting here in Friendly Neighborhood Comics, what's the what was the atmosphere like there? Are there a lot of people waiting to pick up the book?
Yeah,
I should know this because I'm there.
Well,
but.
Yeah, you have your back to it. Let me tell you, you're not facing it. It's no, they have stacks set up as people come in, and there's a good amount of people behind you.
Yeah.
Sitting here waiting, I had a chair set up in case people wanted to sit and talk with us, and gentlemen just took that. So I don't know if we're going to have any guests, but
right.
We'll get another chair maybe. But yeah, no,
they can stand.
It's yeah, they got it all set up. Everybody's shopping, and it's a lot of good conversations going on around us, if you can hear any.
How does it compare for them?
I don't know. I'm waiting. I'm hoping we'll ask Slade if he comes on. He's the co-owner hosting tonight. So I was hoping to get him on. And you can
talk
to him.
Well, hopefully for him, he's too busy to come on.
Well, yeah, he's...
Which is...
He's running around right now.
Which is what he would prefer, I'm sure.
I guess they do these all the time. So they're pretty... This is my first time here for this. But but they do these all the time. They have it set up like to the point that the customers even know that it's like you come in, your stack's there, you're gone, and... you're out, and they're like, I know you said when you have yours, you're not out of the store until like 1:30. They're like, no, we're gonna be out of here at like 12:05, but
yeah.
We've got special permission to keep on going.
Well, the thing is, you can you can't ring them up until 12 o'clock, so
right.
If you have a line of people wanting to check out, I just don't know how you're doing that in 5 minutes.
Yeah, I don't think they do it in five, but that's the idea. It's like everybody's ready to go right at 12, and it's cha-ching, gone.
Well, yeah, yeah. I mean, you'll have a line of people with all their books in their hands ready to go,
right.
but it generally takes a little bit of time to get everybody through the line. Usually about an hour. Like I said, when I do them, it's usually around 1.
Yeah.
Maybe, 12:45 to 1. Just to get everybody checked out and go. So
that's cool. Yeah, they have, I don't know. We'll ask Slade when he comes on how many they have for. So leading up to this, what did you think of Detective Comics leading up to this?
Story-wise?
Yeah.
I liked it.
I loved it.
Obviously, I don't think we talked about $9.99.
We haven't talked about pretty much any of them coming up to this. I was kind of saving it all for tonight, knowing everything was going to hit.
Right. So, yeah, there was like a 5-issue story arc, I guess, or so.
Yeah, six, something like that.
Yeah, that was building up towards this that wrapped up with issue 999. And it really reminded me a lot of the Nightmare storyline that's going on in the Batman series.
Yeah.
It seemed like it was... very similar type storyline, but you know, I guess we'll throw the spoilers out because the book came out 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
But, you know, ultimately it all turns out to be a simulation that Batman's running on himself to celebrate his birthday.
And he does it.
Which was just crazy.
He does it every year. And apparently it's evolved to every year it's supposed to test him, you know, like higher, faster, farther, but wrong universe.
Right.
But every year it's supposed to get better. And he's... What I thought was funny, thinking about it coming here tonight, is that all the talk going on right now on Twitter and everything is about Batman doesn't kill, Batman doesn't kill. And then issue 999, he's trying to kill himself.
Right.
The whole entire goal of the program was to kill himself.
Right. Well, that's... I guess that doesn't count, right?
Yeah, I guess not. Because he didn't. So, but that I just thought it was a funny thing to be thinking about with everything that's going on right now.
I mean, I like storylines like that, but in a way I don't because...
Yeah, it's the Bob Newhart thing.
It's sort of... Well, right, it sort of invalidates the five issues that came before it because, you know, I think it was in the first issue of that story arc, you know, there was a major character death.
Yes.
Well, maybe not a major character, but, you know,
I felt
Leslie
like that
Tompkins.
One hit him the hardest, though, didn't you?
Right, and that was, you know, that to me, it's like,
well,
she's
he saved
up there
Alfred.
With Alfred.
Yeah, but he saved
right.
Alfred.
But she's up there with Alfred in the as far as the characters that I think, you know, are kind of untouchable. You know, they just shouldn't be messed with. And, like, I was kind of bummed out when she got killed, so... In a way, I'm happy that it turned out she didn't.
Listen to you. Like, I was bummed out she was killed, and then I'm kind of bummed out she's not killed now.
Well, no, what I'm saying...
The two
so
things you're saying.
I'm saying in this case, I'm happy that
right.
she's not, but it just invalidates that whole... All those emotions and all that feeling and everything that you read.
Right.
For basically, you just throw those whole five issues out the window, because none of it really happened.
Right.
Nothing had a lasting impression, and... you know, it really just turned out to be a big simulation that was all running in his head. So it's kind of like if you just take it all out of continuity and it didn't happen, what changed? You know, nothing.
Well,
nothing lasting happened.
Nothing lasting happened. But I think, like you said, when we started talking about this, 999, like we learned something new about Batman that's been going on for what's funny now. Like that's like his 80th birthday. So, you know what I mean? Which is kind of
he's
funny.
He's done it 80 times.
80 times he's done this.
Well, I mean, we learned something new about Batman, right? But did Batman learn anything new about Batman? Like, in the end, he was Batman before he started, and he's Batman now that he's finished.
Yeah.
And nothing's really any different. He just knows that, you know, I guess he can handle...
What I thought was cool is the simulation, actually, it's what gives him his... abilities, and it like hones him year after year. He tests himself to the limit, and it's like even reading that story arc, it's like even the detective part is in there, you know, which I thought was really cool, was a lot of fun, was, and that's what one of the things I like about Batman is the detective part. Complete tangent would be, that would be a great movie to me, is if they made a Batman movie where it was just all the detective.
Well, I think you and I have talked about this already.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that would be my dream for the next Batman movie. You know, sort of a low-budget detective kind of noir. I think we even talked about it being black. I know we had this conversation once before on one of our...
Did we record
Go back
it?
And listen to our... Yeah, yes, we did. It was on one of our past episodes, so I don't know which one.
Right.
It was one of the first 24. I can narrow it down that much for you.
well, here it is in 25.
Right, but
we're
talking about
the oldies,
you know,
and goodies.
Maybe a black and white kind of noir. Okay.
Sorry about that. Slade was coming.
That's all right.
No, I'm
distracting me.
I'm listening to it.
Well, like I said, we talked about it sort of being like a black and white kind of noir type detective. Movie.
Yeah.
I think that
you're right.
Unexplored
for that.
Batman when it comes to the... You know, we see that in the comics often.
Yes.
But we have never seen it, even in the animated shows or on the...
You get glimpses of it,
Batman,
but not a
show.
Whole mystery detective
right.
part where you don't... Which you got part of that in this,
The closest I think they came is when they crossed over with Scooby-Doo, and they had to do they had to solve the mystery there.
how about going to the depths on that?
Right. And they would have gotten away with it.
Yeah, if it wasn't for those
meddling kids.
Oh, that's right. We're going deep for issue 25. We're talking Scooby-Doo. Celebrating Detective Comics 1000, we roll out Scooby-Doo for you.
Hey, you know, it's part of his 80-year history, so.
Yeah, I'm sure he's very proud.
Yeah.
Scooby snacks.
It's a defining moment for yeah. Batman.
Oh, that's funny.
Getting to ride in the Mystery Machine.
So, yeah, I was leading up to it. I hadn't read Detective Comics in a long time. And then knowing this was coming up, I started, obviously, months ago. And it was really good.
Yeah.
Just get you back into it. And then I can't wait for 1000. Read it tonight,
yeah,
tomorrow.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to getting in and getting through some of those books because, you know, there's 96 pages. There's probably 9 or 10 different short stories in there. I know I'm really looking forward to the Kevin Smith story with Jim Lee. You know, really, really anxious to see what that looks like.
Yeah. Yeah, I think Slade's making his way over here. Oh, nope. There he goes. Come around this side so you can share that. You can put that in. And we got to talk right into that. So.
Oh, jeez.
There you go.
All right, there we go. Hey, right. Look at that. I'm in the camera.
We're very high tech. So,
oh, yeah.
So.
Yeah, lean into that. He talk about that see. When we talk. John, Slade.
How's it going?
Slade,
good,
John,
good.
Slade, co-owner of Friendly Neighborhood Comics here in Bellingham. So how are things going tonight?
Doing good. You know, one of the cool things is that we started a pre-release for this about like a month and a half, 2 months ago, and we have probably over 50 reserves for it. So it's just one of those cool things that DC provided us with this really nice piece of paper that had all the covers on it. And what they did was they didn't show you the Midnight cover specifically because that does usually drive people out. But, you know, we were really efficient this time around trying to get as many of our customers to know that if they wanted one of these books to do this, and then if you want a Midnight one, you got to come out at midnight.
Yeah.
Awesome.
And I came in here at, what, 10 o'clock?
Yeah.
And it was... Would you have 3 left already?
Yeah. So. I mean, we got to the point where as we got all the reserves together, you know, we didn't have a lot left over at the very end. And that's fantastic. It's for a $10 book. It is fantastic for a store to be sold out of it after we purchased so many for the shelf.
Cool.
Yeah, that's awesome.
John was asking earlier before you came on, how does this compare to your Action 1000?
So Action 1000, I actually wish that DC did the same thing and gave us the covers in advance because they didn't. I mean, they gave it to us in advance enough that we could show people, but they learned, just like we did from that one, that this 1000 was going to be different. And the fact that so many people are doing covers now of their own, for their own stores, there's just checklists out there everywhere. But yeah, with Action, we did the same thing. We sold everything out. We did a couple of restocks, but we learned that there's only a certain point where you get to do so many restocks before now you have extra on the shelf. But yeah, this versus Action, this one was, I think, wildly more successful.
Really? See, mine was just the opposite. I sold quite a bit more Action than I did, at least pre-sold Detective. You know, I'm not doing a midnight release, so we'll see what happens tomorrow with the, you know, with the regular shelf sales. But, I know I didn't order as many copies as I did with Action just because I didn't have as many pre-orders.
Yeah. And I totally get that too. 'Cause at first I kind of felt the same way. We were looking at it like, oh, let's only order a couple extra for the shelf, but I'm glad we ended up ordering a little more because after they, after the final order, the final order cutoff, the FOC, we knew that, you know, we were going to get so many. And then after 2 weeks after that, when this was coming out, it was like tons of people added to their list after the fact.
Yeah, I think you guys are a Comic Hub store as well, right?
Yes.
Yeah, see, so I had the same thing. After FOC, it just started trickling in, just every day somebody snapping up this cover or that cover. And I was telling DJ earlier that, you know, I'm going to be a little light on the shelf tomorrow because of that.
Yeah.
Wishing I had, you know, now I'm wishing I'd gone a little bit heavier on it. But, you know, we'll see what tomorrow looks like. But yeah, I'm not going to have a lot either after all my pre-sale. So,
and I'm the same, you know. I think we're going to really not have really any, but the people who pre-ordered it, I know they're going to be happy because they're going to have all the ones they want. And as you probably know, right, with pre-orders too, you know, there's going to be a certain percentage that goes back on the shelf, which is fine because that gives you extra for other people.
In this case, I'm hoping a couple of them get put back. Like I said, I am anticipating a sellout, you know, tomorrow with what I have. So,
but that's the best part too, is that.
Well, it is. Yeah. It's great. You know, like you said, with Action, I went back. I think I did 2 reorders, you know, over the month or so after it came out. So hopefully Diamond has stock on these, you know, if we need them.
So, yeah.
Let me ask you a reader's question. For reorders, would you be able to reorder any of these covers, or is this the one-time thing and all reorders would be just your standard cover?
It just depends on what they have left in stock.
Yeah.
I mean, you can order anything they have left.
Right.
So, it just depends. Like I said, with Action, I don't think we could get every single cover, even the day after or the day of. I think there was, like, the 30s cover was sold out, if I remember right. But, you know, we were still able to get at least 7 different covers.
Yeah. It was the old-timey one with Supergirl on the cover. Just once that was gone, it was gone.
Yeah. So, you know, like, and I don't know, I haven't checked Diamond, but if I was going to guess, I would think, like, the Bruce Timm and the Greg Capullo covers may be gone first. Those will probably be they were the most popular for me with pre-orders. I thought the Jock cover would actually be right up there, and that's the one I have the most left over. I just didn't get as many orders for that one, so we'll see.
And the Blank cover, how it goes. I couldn't believe how many people were asking me for even extra Blank covers, because that's becoming a thing again, so.
Yeah, the Blank covers always do really well for us, too. It seems like no matter what you order, you never have enough.
Yeah.
So,
not me. I didn't get a Blank cover. I didn't want to break the bank on this one. I only got, what did I get, 3, 4?
I think you ended up with...
Well, that's 40. Yeah, that's 40 bucks, 50 bucks. So,
yeah.
I mean, it's... You know, they're asking a lot. You know, the action books were $7.99. So I think it's, you know, a $2 bump for the same page count. Action might have been 80 pages, if I'm remembering right.
Yeah.
Clay, maybe you remember. But, you know, that $2 bump per book, you know, for somebody that's wanting, you know, like the whole set of them.
Well, if it's 10 bucks, that's 20. 20 bucks.
Yeah.
Well, that's another, right. Yeah. Well, and like I said, I think there's 13 covers all told. So,
yeah, something like 12 or 13.
Well, yeah, but then there's the there's like 6 different stores that got them. Actually, if you go to Tom King's Facebook, he got a couple copies of each, and he laid them all out. It's insane.
I mean, oh yeah, that's right.
Yeah, my Thursday night closer is his best friend. He was there at the beginning when Tom had just written a book, and he was doing podcasts with him, which was really funny.
That's awesome. So. Yeah. But, yeah, you're right, because I know, like, J. Scott Campbell will have a cover out there. Tyler Kirkham has a cover out there. There's all these artists that do specific covers, and then stores do specific covers.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the checklist is just the 13 that we get is only about half the battle. So.
Yeah, with Action, there was only, I think, Newbery Comics and maybe at 3 other places did one. And that was
Weren't as many. It doesn't seem like there were as many for Action. Well, you know, arguably Batman's the more popular character, so you would think that this one would have more surrounding it. But I just think that, you know, it suffers by not being the first book to 1,000.
For you.
You know, that... Well, for me.
For you,
but
yeah,
I mean, I don't know.
But,
well, we'll see how it is right. for every, you know, in general, once the whole thing shakes out for the entire market. I don't know. But it, at least for me, it seems like it... You know, like Action just seemed to have more hype around it.
What time of you know, year like was it, Action? Was it, like, wasn't it closer to the summer? Do you remember?
Oh, I don't know. You make a liar out of me now.
Yeah,
I can't remember.
I'm just trying to think if that had something to do with it, too, where this is, you know, it's cold at night, at least here.
Well,
not
the,
down with him.
It feels like it was probably right around the same time. Like, it was about a year ago,
yeah,
so.
But with Action, it was the end of a story where Detective
well, right,
is the
because,
beginning of a story.
Right, well, Bendis was, like, this was his first published work, right?
Yeah.
For DC was in this book, so. It was kind of ending the Tomasi, I think, I can't even remember who was writing it. But it was ending, yeah, it was ending that run and getting ready for Bendis to ramp up and start doing all of his stuff. Because I think everything went on hiatus for a while the Man of Steel miniseries was going on.
Yeah. Well, this one did, so. Too. It was like a month before the last one.
Right. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, $9.99 was a few weeks ago. So.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I also know with, like, this one, you have several big names doing some writing and some artistry and a couple
right.
different stories, which I know Action was the same, but, you know, is there something to say about
well,
the
but
names
the only
in this
thing
one?
In, I think the only thing in Action, I mean, the only one that had relevance was going to be the Bendis story because it was going forward and setting the stage. Everything else felt to me like just the artist's retrospectives or, like, you know, their tributes to the character. But I didn't feel like any of the other stories had a lasting, you know, we're leaving a lasting mark on what was going to happen going forward. I haven't read the detective one, so I'm not sure, you know, what's going to be relevant in this book or not. But
and I was sure that Bendis was just going to kill everybody off like he did when he took over the Avengers. He killed
yeah.
half the Avengers. And I was waiting for him to kill Lois and the son, and I think even better is that he did the whole, you know, black suit Superman. He sent the son, the dad, and Lois to go discover what Krypton was, and then all of a sudden Superman and Earth get pulled into the Phantom Zone,
yeah,
and then have to battle. And he's like, "Oh, cool, my family's not here, so let me just go ahead and destroy everything I can
yeah.
in my way."
Yeah, it was pretty good. I wasn't sure what to expect with Bendis hopping on. You know, he can be hit or miss sometimes, so you never know what you're going to get.
That's very true.
But I think overall his run has been pretty good so far.
I do wish Hickman though followed through with his Twitter post after Bendis announced he was coming over. Hickman posted, "Oh, Captain, my Captain."
Yeah, but now it looks like Marvel's got him locked up for the summer anyway. So,
well, that helps when you shovel buckets of money at his feet and hand him the reins right. of some of his favorite characters.
Well, I think, yeah, I don't think they had, what was Marvel going to do? I mean, they
yeah.
can't pin it all on, I mean, Donny Cates is the new Bendis over there, but
yeah.
He can't do it all, so.
He's fantastic because he goes and he pulls storylines and characters from books from years ago that they were never going to use again, and he goes, "Hey, go find yourself issue 298 of Avengers, because hey, I'm mentioning that character now."
Yeah, that Thor, like the Mighty Thor run from like
yeah.
10 years ago is now, you know, worth who knows what it's worth because
the Hunters came in fully.
Yeah, yeah, which is great. Yeah, I like that he's doing that as well. Kind of shows a love for the history of Marvel.
Yeah.
So, do you guys want a date?
I mean, this is what you set up, right?
Yeah, no, I think I'm having a blast. If you could, I mean, nobody could see me. I'm just sitting here smiling. Like,
well,
you guys are
well,
just
everybody could see
dropping
you.
Knowledge, and I'm just like, huh?
It's funny because you mentioned you have a store in Texas, and I was just down
yeah.
there at the end of November. And
oh, really?
One of the yeah. funny things about that was I went to a bunch of different stores, and I got a buddy who runs the Austin Books and Games –
Okay.
You know, obviously you probably know Jen from Houston.
Yeah, from Space Cadets.
Yeah. And it's, and it's even funnier because I actually I do a little part-time thing with Adam, who is now folding his company into Stu's Comic Hub. So I actually make phone calls for them about Comic Hub.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I see Adam on Facebook a lot.
Yeah.
I don't know him, but I see him there with, you know, with the Comic Hub.
Yeah. He was the Valiant guy for a long time. If you ever, if you're a part of Comics Pro, he was the one who would always put, get the suite, and everyone would go hang out in the suite.
Oh, cool.
Cool. This is awesome.
Yeah.
This is awesome. We got to do this more often.
Yeah.
John's not this talkative with me. I don't know what it is.
Well, it's because you don't know anything.
No, I don't. It's hard to, not like
it's hard
you
to
guys.
Have a one-sided one. If I'm just talking one-sided, I can just do that in my head. I don't have to say it out loud.
There we go. All right. So now I got to learn even more.
And I keep on looking behind you to see what original art that is.
Oh, my Green Lantern?
Oh, yeah.
Can you see it? Oh. It's actually a guy that I used to work with at Bed Bath & Beyond. And, of course, the connection, I don't know if you can still see me. Yeah. But, he's trying to break into comics, and I think he moved out to California for a while to try to break in and was doing some covers for some really small companies. But if he ever hits it big, I have an original.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
I do this thing called the Booster Gold Project because I'm probably the only big Booster Gold fan out there. And what I do is I make 9-panel, 11x17 pages, and I will go and meet artists and have them draw their character as Booster Gold. So Jerry Ordway, I had him putting on Superman's outfit. So what you do is you take Booster Gold's goggles and you put everything around it. So Amanda Connor, right. She blessed me with a Harley Quinn Booster Gold. Jimmy Palmiotti reluctantly did a Daredevil Booster Gold, and she was making fun of him through the whole thing. and then I meet my pages have small time, nobody knows them indie artists next to, you know, Dan Parent and Jerry Ordway, and that's how I really like it.
That is awesome. Yeah.
So yeah. I love indie art.
Yeah, that's very cool.
All right, so what's the plan?
There's a couple people coming in, so I'm going to jump off for a little bit.
All right. But
yeah, very cool to meet. We'll have to do this. You and I will have to talk again.
Yeah, Slade, it was great meeting you, man.
Yeah, great meeting you too. Definitely, let's plan this again.
All right, thank you.
All right,
sounds good. Thanks, Slade.
You're welcome.
Thanks. All right, I'm an idiot.
Why'd you say that?
No, I'm just...
I mean, I know that, but why are you saying it?
Yeah, you were trying to keep it a secret for 20... It took 25 issues for it to
I
come
know.
Out.
I mean, I think I did good.
What, for 24 issues?
For 24, yeah.
Yeah, there you go. Me, not so much. No. No, you guys, I mean... Oh, I talk to Slade all the time, obviously. I talk to you all the time. The knowledge you guys have is awesome. And I say that like when I'm on the bat pod and I'm like, well, I refer to John all the time. I'm going to, can I get a, phone a friend on this one?
Yeah. I need a lifeline.
I need a lifeline, please. No. No, that my area of expertise is interpretation. And like you said the other day.
Yeah.
Oh, there we go. It's a good thing. Now we have poor connection. Can you hear me?
Oh, I can hear you. I just haven't been able to see you for about 5 minutes.
Oh, really? Oh, that's you.
Right about the time Slade was wanting to look at the Green Lantern picture, I wasn't sure if he could see me because I can't see you.
Yeah, I just lost you because of the crowd. Remember the crowd?
But of course, yeah, the picture is actually hanging on the wall in his store, so I don't know why he's asking me about it.
Right. Exactly.
We're losing how long we can keep up this ruse
with this illusion.
Yeah.
Hey, quick.
I am not Mysterio, so.
Right. Quick question before we get into our comic books: did you read Rise? Yet?
No, not yet.
Are you going to
Well,
are you gonna,
no, because I don't have a copy. I don't have a copy.
Oh, you don't?
So I won't. No, I sold out last week, so I won't be reading it.
Okay.
Did you read it?
No. No, I've been way too busy. I will have read it by the end of this issue.
Right.
Well, through the magic of television or whatever you
through
want
to say. Through the magic of technology.
Yeah.
Before we're done, I'll have slept and read this issue.
Yeah.
So.
Along with Detective Comics 1000.
Right.
So, anything else you want to make me look stupid with? Is there any... You want to start?
No, I think
that was awesome, though.
Mission accomplished.
Yes, very much so. I just sat here with a big grin on my face listening to you two. Just, holy cow. Does anybody want to know, like, paint codes for cars? Because I could give you 1F7. I could tell you that's silver on a Toyota. 1G3. I mean, I could
just hammer out dents? How do you hammer out dents on a bumper, DJ?
Oh, well, let's see. There's a lot of heat involved, and then, you know, you got to get them behind it, some nuts and bolts. Not as exciting.
Yeah.
No, that was great. That was great. Hopefully everybody else enjoyed that too. We'll definitely get back in here though, cause, getting you two together is a blast.
Yeah.
So while everybody's getting in line for their books here, you ready to wrap up and we'll go to our, comics for this week?
Yeah, sure.
You all about done? Alright, yeah. So, how can I spend my money this week?
Alright, well, I'm going to tell you, DJ, the first book we have on our Speculator Roundup this week is Marvel Rising number 1. This is the 1 in 25 variant, so, you know, these things tend to go for a bit over cover price anyways, but this one is going crazy for some reason. It's currently selling for about $125.
Yeah, that is
usually
crazy.
Usually these things sell at a dollar per ratio. So you would expect to see a 25 variant selling for about $25. So this is like five times that. It's really going nuts. So I don't know what shot you have of finding one of these in a store, you know, at this point, at anything less than that kind of price. But if you can luck into finding one of these things out there somewhere, I would definitely grab it up because that's crazy. I don't know many stores that ordered 25 copies of this book, and that probably has something to do with it. I ordered 2 copies, I think. So, you know, for what it's worth, I don't know what other stores are doing.
And you have no idea why, huh?
Just, I guess, the image. I mean, just the cover itself. And like I said, it's probably a... Even though it's a 1 in 25, it's probably one of the scarcer 1 in 25s because this isn't a series that a lot of stores are going to go very deep on. So I just don't think that there's going to be a lot of them out there, and that obviously will have something to do with it. From Archie Comics, we got Sabrina the Teenage Witch. Issue number 1 came out today, and the Adam Hughes variant for this is selling for about $6. So it's, again, it's not going crazy. It's definitely not Marvel Rising, but you know, that's a couple dollars over cover price. But Adam Hughes has a huge following, and you know, this is a good looking cover, so I expect it to see some extra heat. You know, again, this is one, if you're a smarter retailer, you ordered up on a little bit. I ordered more of these than I did the regular cover, but I still sold out today, so I would expect these things to not be super hard to find, but within a couple of days, they're going to be gone. So
did you
if you want one.
Did you just say a smarter retailer would order more, and then you went proceeded to say you ordered more?
I I was hoping that would fly right under the radar, but I did say that. If I was a really, really smart retailer, I would have ordered more than the more that I ordered.
Well, let's just...
Because I still sold out, so...
Right. Well, let's just settle it smart. You're a smart guy.
There you go. I'll take it. Neon Future issue number 1. This is from a publisher called Impact Theory. I completely missed this on the order form. I never even heard of this. But if you can find one in a store on a shelf, it's selling for $8 to $12. The creator of this book actually did something cool today and made a promise to personally retweet any tweets from stores that were showing pictures of the book, you know, racked on the shelves or customers buying the books or anything like that. So that's pretty cool, but I don't imagine he was super busy today because I don't know of a lot of stores that probably found this and put it on the shelf. But
did you?
If you could find it, I did not. I didn't. No, like I said, I completely missed it.
Oh, okay.
I didn't even see Impact Theory anywhere on my order form or Neon Future. And quite honestly, if I had seen it, I probably wouldn't have ordered it anyways. Because I don't know what kind of property it is, and it's hard to gamble on things like this too often. Because most of the time, they just sit on your rack and nobody buys them. So. And from Scout Comics. Now, we've talked about Scout a few times before. They are a smaller publisher, but their books tend to have a little heat behind them when they are released. So this one is called Star Bastard, issue number one. We are going to talk about this a little bit longer. I mean, a little bit later with our recommended reading. So I won't say too much about it. But it's selling for $8 or so. The 1 in 10 variant are being listed at $30. I couldn't find one that actually sold yet, so I don't know if that price is going to hold. Again, that's three times the ratio, you know, price for that too. So, you know, you would expect to see this book sell for $10 to $12 normally. It shouldn't be quite as hard to find because Scout Comics is starting to go on the radar for retailers, and they're starting to see more shelf space. So. If you can find it, I guess wait till I talk about it later on and decide whether you want to go buy it.
That'll be in a few minutes.
Just in a few minutes, yes. I'm predicting the future, but it's not too far away. So jumping into our back issue books for this week, we have Spawn issue 240. This is not that old. I think issue 295 came out today, so you're talking about a book that's just, you know, 3 years old or so. This thing's selling for $125. I can't find any reason why. It's not a first appearance of anybody. I can't find anything noteworthy that happened in the book. But for some reason, this thing is going crazy on eBay. So if you can find one out there in a back issue bin somewhere, I would definitely be on the lookout for that because it's going for insane money. Spawn number one only sells for $15, so I don't know why Spawn 2, why Spawn 240 is selling for $125. I would venture to say there's a lot more Spawn number 1s out there than there are Spawn 240s, but still, it's...
Was it a beginning of a new story arc or something?
No, and you know, if you look at 239 or 241, they're not seeing that kind of price either, so it's not like it's a, you know, a time period or, you know, something was going on. I don't know. It's just one of those things. It's an anomaly.
Could that... what if you bought a book for personal reasons and you just paid, like, insane money? Does that, like, reset the market? Like, could one person have paid this and then everybody's like, oh, and now nobody knows why, but everybody's buying it? Do you know what I mean?
It could, but generally the market isn't set by one sale. You know, you would have to see this multiple, like there's multiple sales of this book going in this price range. There's always outliers. You know, people list things on eBay for crazy prices, just fishing really. And right. Then every once in a while they get lucky and somebody pays it.
Yeah.
And,
whoops.
You know, it pays this crazy price. But that doesn't usually set the trend for everything. It's just, you know, people look at it and go, boy, that guy was dumb, you know, and move on. But like I said, these things happen sometimes. You know, it was a low print run book, but like I said, I don't know really the reason. So moving on, we've got Incredible Hulk Volume 2. This is issue number 12. This is the first appearance of Devil Hulk. You know, again, this is going to tie back to our favorite subject, the Immortal Hulk.
I was going to say, our Immortal Hulk Minute.
Yeah, well, there was no new issue this week, so we don't have
that's never stopped us before.
Yeah, but the Devil Hulk, you know, is rumored to be appearing in the Immortal Hulk. So that's brought the awareness of this book up because it's the first appearance. Selling for about $20 right now, so it's not super crazy. But, you know, it is one to watch. And from Volume 1 of The Incredible Hulk, we have Issue 347. This is the first Mr. Fix-It. For those that don't know, this is the Hulk when he was basically a mob enforcer, running around in Vegas with a suit on and, you know, taking on this persona. Again, this is just more speculation about something that may be happening in the Immortal Hulk. Selling for about $25 on this one, so be on the lookout for those. And then this book just came out last week, yep. But Naomi number 3. Just really starting to take off. I saw a guy on Facebook today selling Naomi 1, 2, and 3 with both printings of number 1 for $100. So I don't know if he was going to get that, but people are definitely this book is really starting to gain some interest, and a lot of people are picking it up. So I did read number 3 finally,
yep.
Since the last time we talked, and it was actually a really good issue. Still don't know why these things are going for crazy money, but
it's got to be
a pretty good
story. The low print, like you said, because it is a good story, but
And I would expect to see the market adjust on this because, you know, as a retailer, I'm going to start ordering more and more of each progressive issue to the point where eventually the demand just won't really be there past cover price anymore. You know, the low print run will stop. And, you know, stores, if they're smart and watching what their sales are, they'll start ordering more copies for the rack to make sure they don't sell out so quickly. So, but that being said, we can't go back in time and readjust our orders for number 3. So I would expect this book to continue to go up while it gets harder and harder to find. And that's it for our back issue and our speculator books. So we're going to jump right on into final order cutoff. We've got several variant covers for DC that look promising this week. Batgirl number 34, we have the Josh Middleton variant. Batman Beyond number 31 by Ben Oliver. Justice League Dark number 10 by Clayton Crane. And Wonder Woman number 69 by David Finch. I would put my money on the Josh Middleton Batgirl and the David Finch Wonder Woman. They're just both really great looking covers. And then this isn't necessarily cover related, but Naomi 1, 2, and 3 are back on final order cutoff for their second and final printings. DC has said that there won't be any more printings of these. So these are actually likely to have lower print runs in some cases than the first printings, depending on how much the stores think they can jump on and recapture some of these sales. So I know I'm going to order several, but I don't know if I'll order as many as the first printings. So it might be something to keep an eye on. And then if you're just interested in getting in and you don't care about the value and you just want to read it before number 4 comes out or number 5, get in and order some of these second prints because it's a pretty good story and it's worth the read. And that's it for DC. There's no new series to talk about. Moving down to IDW Comics, we have Narcos number 1. This is based off the Netflix TV show, Netflix original series, Narcos. It's had about 4 seasons on Netflix. It's one of my favorite shows. I really like it a lot. So I'm interested to see the comic book and wonder where it fits in the storyline, if it's going to take off after one of the seasons or it's going to be an in-between story. I don't really know, but if you're into this, if you're into the show, you might want to come in and pick that up. From IDW. Marvel Comics, we have no variant covers available to look at, so we're going to move off of that. For new series, we have Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, issue number 1 of 5. This is the first comic book that I can think of that's based off of a theme park ride. so, actually, I take it back because last year there was a Haunted Mansion comic book, so this might be number 2, but I don't know where the story comes from because I don't know what the ride entails, but it is Star Wars.
Now,
so
the Galaxy's Edge is open now, right?
It opens in, I thought it opened at the end of April.
Okay.
But it's opening
it's
soon.
It's opening this year.
It's opening this year. In California, it's opening in about a month. I think Florida is a few months behind.
Okay.
And from what I understand, this is actually, it's a ride, but it's also
like
an experience.
Yeah.
It's right. Yeah. It's a whole attraction. Yeah. So there is a story that they're building into the user experience when people go and visit.
Right.
And I'm sure that's what the, this, comic book is going to be based on. But, like I said, it is Star Wars. So it's got a built in fan base. Being Marvel, there's multiple covers available. So, if this floats your boat, get in there and get one of these ordered.
I'm going to pick that up. We planned our whole, like, we're going to Disney in January just for that. So hopefully it'll have died down a little bit by then.
I was going to say, get in line now and maybe you'll be all right for January.
Yeah.
Also from Marvel, we have Thanos number 1 of 6 issue miniseries. Also multiple covers. For this, the last Thanos series was very, very hot for Marvel.
I wonder why.
It introduced Cosmic Ghost Rider, and that had a lot to do with it. But obviously, this will be right on the heels, or actually, might hit the stores even a week before Endgame. Endgame hits the theater, so this should be very, very hot and have a lot of people looking for it. I know I'm planning on going pretty heavy on this one. Just to capitalize on all the furor that's going to surround Endgame. So, but if you're looking for a specific cover or you want to make sure you get one, I would definitely get in there and get it ordered. And our War of the Realms minute, only to be outshined by our Immortal Hulk minute.
Yeah. It's going to be the summer War of the Realms.
Yeah.
Is this the first spinoff that we...
No, this is at least the third one.
Oh, is it? Okay.
About. Yeah,
they're all blended together.
Last week was Punisher. I think the week before we had two more.
Oh, that's right.
So this is War of Realms Uncanny X-Men, issue number 1 of 3. Again, multiple covers available for this. War of the Realms hits next week, so
right.
We'll be able to start to see how this is going to play out once this thing starts to release.
Pick it up.
I did see it.
Highly recommended to pick it up, read it, because you're going to fall behind.
Yes. If you're going to keep up with War of the Realms, do not let it pile up. You're going to have multiple books every week tying into this, and you can quickly fall behind, I think, if you don't stay up on it. So, but I did see a tweet that was put out today by another store, and I will reiterate it here as well. If you're interested in these books, the earlier you can get them ordered, the better. It really helps your stores figure out how many people are interested in these things and how many of them are going to sell. War of the Realms, the main series, will sell fairly well, but it's really hard to gauge a lot of these spinoffs because you don't know how relevant they're going to be to the story and how many people really want them. So if you're interested in this or any of the War of the Realms coming up, most stores have checklists in them now that tell you everything that's coming out. I would go in and order as early as you can for this stuff. And then, again, it's starting to hit now. Like, it starts next week, so
yeah,
it's going to be in stores before you know it. Real quickly, we'll go through just a few more. From Archie Comics, we have Jughead Hunger versus Vampironica, issue number 1. So Archie is definitely dipping their toes into the horror market lately. Jughead, The Hunger, and Vampironica both have separate ongoing titles, so this is just the meeting of the two. Multiple covers available. From Valiant Comics, we have Punk Mambo, issue number 1. Multiple cover options there. And from Zenoscope, we have Grim Fairy Tales number 27 and Zodiac number 3. Again, I only mention those because there's so many cover options available. On Zodiac, you really want to look at the C cover. Durla Santa Cruz. It's a really great cover. So that is it for Final Order Cutoff. We're going to move into recommended reading. I know DJ and I both have the same book we're going to talk about.
Yep. Save that
second.
For last.
So I'll go first, and we'll talk about Star Bastard number 1 from Scout Comics. So we are going to temporarily change the title of this segment away from recommended reading. And we're just going to call it Books I Read Today. Being that Detective Comics was 100 pages, I didn't have a chance to read a third book. If I had, I probably would have. I can't give a very, very high recommendation for Star Bastard number one, unfortunately. It's written by Andrew Clemson.
That's
and
it very
has
honest
art by,
of you.
Yeah. It has art by Jethro Morales. Now, we talked earlier about this being a spec book, so it's definitely worth picking up if you're all about the flip and the money. If you're just looking for a good read, I'm not sure that Star Bastard number one is going to do it for you. It was very, what's the word I'm looking for? It really followed all the sci-fi tropes. It just wasn't super original. It just felt like everything I've ever already read. You've got the foul-mouthed captain who, you know, doesn't play by the rules and, you know, is the ladies' man and always getting into trouble, and his crew that's following him. The art, you know, and I hate to turn this into a bash segment because it's not what I really want to do, but the art just really wasn't that great. The writing, it was very vulgar. It felt like just for the sake of being vulgar. Like, I am not one that backs away from curse words or foul language, and it doesn't turn me off in any capacity, but this just felt like it was there just to be there. It didn't feel like it added to the story at all or really had anything going on. So unfortunately, it really wasn't my thing, so I can't
let me
I'm
ask you
talk
this
too much more about
let
it.
Me ask you this.
Yeah.
We both know we had limited amount of time to read this week because of Detective
right.
Comics. What made you pick it in the first place?
Well, just because I knew that it was a spec book for one, and I always try to do a small publisher
right.
Indie book in a number one issue if I can, and this happened to be the only book this week that fit
right.
all those criteria. So it wasn't like it even just shouted at me from the cover or from the shelf as something that I really wanted to read. I picked it based on those criteria. And like I said, if I had had time after reading Detective 1000, I probably would have picked up something else and read it. So it's the first time really that we've come to this segment, and I really haven't been able to recommend one of the books
well,
I read. And you know, that's just the reality of reading comics,
either,
right?
You
like,
know,
not every comic that you read, you know, is going to be for everybody. And hey, you know what? This might be your thing. Like,
right.
you know, if it sounds like something you would like, it may be your thing. It just unfortunately wasn't mine. So, like I said, I'm not about bashing books, so I'm just going to leave it at that and move on. And unless you have something else besides Detective,
yeah, I have
that you want to talk about. Okay,
same thing. Limited time this week. I know last week I said I was going to read Rise, but I could not find the time. I'm very interested in reading it, but we had the conversation the other day when I went in the store, and they're like, "Oh, somebody was there," and they're like, "DJ was reading Rise," and I was like, "Yeah, I started it, and it's." We'll get to it when I review it next week. I promise I'll read it for next week. But, no, so I picked up Vader Dark Visions 2.
Okay.
Story by Dennis Hallam. Art by Brian Level. And it started off a little bit slow, and it has a lot of the same stuff, like, you know, the little things that you'd see in any Star Wars movie. You're going to find a lot of similarities to some things in the movies. But the story itself, I thought around that, it was pretty good. It's a really quick read, literally 5 minutes. But it really, like the first one, you know how the first one, it was Darth Vader, and he just, that whole, people had a different view of him.
Right.
This one here was a completely different story. They have the correct view of him. And just how people feel about him that are under his command. And it really does grip you by the end. You're kind of laughing through it. You kind of feel bad for the guy. But it's good. 5 minute story. The artwork's pretty simple. Same. I think this is for, I wouldn't say younger readers. I mean, it is for younger readers, but it's still a good book to pick up. Like I said, a 5 minute read. It's fun. If you like Star Wars, you can't go wrong.
Okay. Yeah. Cool. I'm looking forward to read it because I really liked the first one. I just didn't get to that one today. I do. Before we get into obviously we're going to talk about Detective 1000 more.
The rest of the way.
If we haven't buried the lead. Yeah. But one more thing I do want to discuss that I can recommend. I got a chance this week to read Nightwing issues 50 through 58. So this picked up issue 50 right after, spoilers, him getting shot in the head.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's the one I was reading. Yep.
Yeah, and so I read those 8 issues, and I honestly can't recommend those highly enough. They were excellent. Really, really good take. I had heard some of what was going on with Nightwing, through other people talking about it, and him going by Rick Grayson instead of Dick Grayson and things like that. And I really was a little predisposed to being irritated by that, but I have to say after reading it, I really liked the premise behind it.
Right.
I like where the reasons why, the reasons for the name change and,
It all fits.
Really his struggle basically to recuperate from getting shot in the head because, we all think, especially with comic books, we're all used to seeing our heroes. Name me one superhero that hasn't been shot and close to death or died and come back to life or, this happens all the time. And 99.9% of the time, they just pick up right where they left off and keep on going like nothing ever happened. But this is a little different. Like, he is actually dealing with the repercussions of getting shot in the head. I don't think it's
right. And being
spoilers
human.
Necessarily to say
no.
That, he's got some memory loss. He doesn't really remember his life before being shot. Doesn't remember being Dick Grayson. So this is him trying to put the pieces back together. And at this point, it's probably getting ready to come out in trade paperback form to get this storyline. Like I said, I can't recommend it highly enough. I really enjoyed it. And I'm actually really now looking forward to – it's one of my most anticipated books right now for the next issue to come out. So
cool. Yeah, I'm in the middle of that one too, as we said, a couple weeks ago.
Yeah, well, we talked about it, I think, last week or the week – right.
Yeah.
And, I was holding off because I didn't necessarily want to read issues 13 through 38 or 58, whatever it is. But I just jumped in at number 50 because I figured that was a good, a complete change to the character and the story, and it was a good place to jump in.
Yeah.
I'd still like to go back and read and see what happened between issues 13 and 49,
but that's we've talked about that in the past. That's something to be said for just jumping in, saying, like when we were kids, you had no choice. You were a kid. It was your first comic
book. Yeah, you just jump in.
You jump in.
Right. But it's a good place to jump in, like I said, because you don't have to really know any of the history of the character prior to issue 50. You can just jump in and pick right up, and it's a really good story, really compelling, actually. So I enjoyed it.
Cool. All right, we ready?
Yeah,
so
ready.
I think for Detective Comics 1000, I figured we'll do a few minutes, at least spoiler-free, because I can't imagine a lot of people have read the whole thing by the time this comes out. So we'll do a few minutes like that, and then we'll get into – I got some stuff I want to say that is loaded with spoilers and stuff like that. I'm sure you do too. So we'll do that. So first off, what did you think of the book as a whole?
As a whole, I thought it was good. I didn't think it was fantastic, but I thought it was good. I thought it was overall better than the Action Comics 1000 that we got last year. The stories felt a little bit more relevant to Batman and not necessarily just... the thing with Action 1000 is it really felt like a lot of fluff pieces and just tributes to Superman as opposed to actual stories with Superman. And this one, I didn't feel quite the same way. Like, they all felt like relevant stories. They all told pieces of Batman's history or legacy. And like I said, I thought they were all relevant, which I enjoyed. That being said, with any kind of anthology book, I don't know what the final count was. There was at least 10 stories in here. Some are higher than others. They're not all great. So there were some that I thought were really good, and there were some that I thought were just mediocre. But like I said, that's to be said by anything where you have, you know, 10, 11, you know, short stories, you know, together.
I think I have them marked. I think it's 8.
Is it 8?
I think. Okay. I think. But I think that plays to kind of what you were getting at. I felt the same way. There are parts of it that, and we'll get into it with spoilers, that there's one of my favorite all-time Batman stories in there. And we'll get into that in spoilers. But there were a few that you were like, oh, they kind of dragged along. Yeah. You know, some stories are better than others. There's actually a few in there that drag along and have a really good payoff at the end, I thought. You didn't know where it was going, and then it they wrap up quick. What are some of them, like 4 or 5 pages?
Yeah, three to four, up to some of them that are 8 to 10 pages. So they didn't all get equal time, but some of them were pretty quick.
Yeah, and I mean, but yeah, as a whole, it's, you know, some of it, not everything can be great. You put a bunch of stories together, you're going to have highs and lows. But I thought as a whole, I thought it was a really good 1,000. So
yeah, like I said, it didn't disappoint. I really enjoyed it. It's just, to me, you know, from the pragmatic point of view, anytime you're asking me to plunk down $10 on a comic book, you know, I really want to be wowed for my $10. And it was, like I said, it was good. Some parts of it were wow, but it wasn't great throughout. And, you know, I wish some of the stories were a little stronger. But
yeah, I had Backcracker, one of our listeners, tweeted at us this tonight, said he picked his up today. And I wanted to get right into it with him. I'm like, oh, I can't wait for you to read it hear what you think about it. But, I thought it was really good. I think, and it is getting a lot of play. I know that. I mean, it's all over the place, all over Twitter. People are happy with it, it seems. Anything else spoiler free?
No, I don't think so.
Yeah,
I mean, it's hard to talk about.
I know.
It. Yeah. It's hard to really talk significantly about it without getting into spoilers, other than just to say overall whether you enjoyed it or you didn't. So,
all right, you want to just go right through it, and we'll do we'll start with each story, and just
that's fine.
Quick
I didn't highlight notes for every story. I only wrote notes for the ones that, you know, I thought touched me in some way. So, however you want to do it, that's fine.
Okay. Yeah, well, that's the thing, is that you just look at them. So what about the first one, The Longest Case?
Right, which is, that's the Scott Snyder and Greg Capullo,
yep.
Right?
Yep.
So a couple things that struck me on this. I thought it was actually a really good
story. I thought of you at the end of it.
Yeah, did you?
Yeah, I was like, after everything you were saying earlier.
Well, we talk a lot about, you know, how they don't play up the detective aspect of Batman as much as I think they should. The comics obviously do it better than other media, but, you know, it's an aspect that's not often brought out. So, you know, this is Batman, you know, working a case that obviously he's been working on for many years. One clue leads to the next, and he's traveling all over the world.
Right.
Trying to solve this case. You know, I had some thoughts in my head that the first thing that came to my mind is that maybe it wasn't a case at all. Maybe these were just all completely random events that Batman was trying to read more into. But, you know, that obviously turned out to not be the case.
Yeah. I thought, so I read through it and I was like, oh, finally, this is great. It's like the detective, you know, just like we were saying. And I was really excited about it. And then at the end.
Yeah, then what happened, right?
It wasn't. I was like, first off, I laughed and I thought of you because I'm like, what a. But if I was Batman, I'd be pissed.
I don't think he was too happy, really, at first.
I would be pissed. I would be. I mean, how is he not. I was actually disappointed that it was a short story because I want the rest of this story where Batman, like, destroys everything. It's like, wait a minute. This is his longest case. He's been on this since. It's like, it's almost. The only thing that was missing, they're all sitting around that table. The only thing that was missing is that when he walked in the room, they went, gotcha! And they're all pointing a finger at the poor guy. And you're like, this guy hasn't been tormented enough. His parents die. He goes through this, and this is his longest case. And it's like, hey, welcome to the club, dude. What?
Right. So here's what struck me about this, right? This is his longest case. He's been working on it for years. He's traveling all over the world, you know, following clues. Takes him back to Gotham. He finally figures out X marks the spot, and he opens the room, and all those people are sitting there.
Waiting for
him. Were they sitting there the whole time? Like,
well,
how did they know he was going to solve the case that night? That's the first thing that struck me is, like, how long have you been waiting for him to get there? It's like, you know, I don't know how they could have known he was going to solve the case right when he did. So I thought that was a little hokey that they would all just kind of be sitting there waiting for him. Maybe they meet every single night at 9 p.m. just saying maybe tonight will be the night that Batman figures it out.
I think it's just a matter of, like, obviously for the sake of the story, they put them there at the table. But if you look at the picture, there's people in the background as well. So it's a place that people get to go to. But it's like you look at all the people that are there. Batman's a much better detective than any of them. And he's just getting there?
Well, that's the other thing that struck me, too, is, like, when did Hawkman and Hawkgirl become detectives? Like, I know Hawkman has the archaeology thing, and, you know, they're both immortal, so I guess they're detectives just
probably,
by the fact that
it took them
they know 5, a lot of stuff.
5,000 years to do it.
Right. But still, it was like, you know, I can get Detective Chimp being there and some of the other ones, but I don't know about Hawkman and Hawkgirl being part of the world's greatest detectives. So
yeah.
I thought that was a little weird too.
So,
but
it was a fun story by the end. You laughed and it was, you know, it was a creative story and you're like, and you wonder, are they going to bring that back at some point that like a place that he can now go to access even more information? Use those libraries to try and solve ancient cases maybe when he's bored. I don't know. But
well, and the other part of that too is, you know, so they get him to, they're trying to talk him down basically because he is agitated that, you know,
he went through
all this just to get there. And they try to calm him down by saying, hey, well, look at this book and you can see some of the things we're dealing with. And we don't know what he read, but Batman goes, wow. And that's how the story ends. And I don't just ever picture Batman being a wow person. Like, I don't think anything wows Batman, so that also kind of struck me that I don't think anything he could have ever read in that book would have caused that reaction from Batman.
Right.
But it makes you wonder what it was, because that was a little out of character, I thought, as well. So
yeah. So the second story, Manufacture for Use.
Yeah.
Kevin Smith wrote this one.
Yeah, my buddy Kevin Smith. Well, I say my buddy. But, you know, this is the one I was looking forward to reading.
Yes.
Because, you know, I'm a big fan of Kevin Smith, and obviously I'm a big fan of Jim Lee. So what did you think of it?
I liked it. I thought it – well, first off, coming off of that first story, then you it's like right on – it's like on the next page, you're like, oh, what's going on here? And you read at the – the end. I was waiting for more out of that first story.
Right.
But – I was a little confused at the very beginning, and then as you follow along, it's obviously you find out it's, you know, he's in disguise.
Right.
And I thought it was a very emotional ride by the time you get to the end. And it's I don't know if I would do that. You know how he melted the gun down and put it on his chest. I don't know if, you know, because that is an emotional thing. He pays for the gun, and then he's going to wear that around. That's a pretty heavy thing to do.
Yeah. Well, I thought it was – you get the sense that it was early in his career because
– Yeah.
You know, the suit he was wearing, and you can tell by the – the bat symbol on his chest, that it was one of his earlier iterations. So I think that was something that he did early on. But I really liked Alfred in this story because, you know, Bruce shows up back to the Batcave with the gun that killed his parents. And Alfred was like, you know, I helped you with the damn penny and the dinosaur and this
almost,
and that.
Yeah, he almost broke his back with the dinosaur.
But I don't really think this is, you know, do you really want to put this in your trophy case? You're already damaged enough, basically. And Batman says, this isn't going into the case. I mean, it's not going to be a trophy. And that's when he repurposes it. Basically, for something, I think the line was somewhere along the lines of, you know, it broke my heart, and now it's going to save my heart, or something like that. Basically, he turned it into more or less a bulletproof vest or, you know, a plate on his chest that was going to protect him if he ever got shot there. So, I don't know. I really liked it. Again, I thought it was very emotional.
Yes.
It introduced me to my all-time new favorite word, which is whackpacker. I just thought that was – I laughed out loud, and I can't wait to use that in a sentence.
I think you just did.
Yeah, well, out in the world when nobody's expecting it.
Yeah.
But I really did like the story, and you know, it was kind of very Kevin Smithy to me, you know.
Yeah, I liked how it, you know, with the narration, you have all of the rogues going and right. all the battles going in the background during the narration. That's why I was like, oh, I wonder where this is. Oh, okay, I get it now. But it was very emotional. I actually read it twice.
Yeah.
Because I was like, you get to the end and you're like, oh, okay, I'll start this again, and then you understand it a little bit better.
Right.
So yeah, that was another one that was I thought was a good story.
Yeah.
So what's the third one here? The legend of Newt Brody.
Yeah.
Writer Paul Dini.
Yep.
And pencil by Dustin Nugent.
Wynn? Win.
That's how you say that?
Pronounced, it is.
Wow.
Yep.
Okay. That's time I do that.
Yep.
So what'd you think of this one?
Well, this isn't one of the ones that I actually took notes on, so I guess that'll tell you that it wasn't really one of my favorites. It was okay. You know, obviously this is it's played off as a TV documentary on one of the worst crooks, who has this guy who basically you hear from all the different villains in Gotham, how they all hired this guy to work for him. And he screwed up every time they hired him. And then, you know, you come to find out. Now, I was thrown off by this a little bit because I figured pretty early on that this was probably Batman in disguise. I didn't ever put it together that it was all the Bat family
at
playing
different
this
times,
guy
yeah.
at different times in disguise. Right. So I thought that was a pretty cool little twist. But yeah, it turns out that this was basically just the Bat family infiltrating all these capers that were being planned and sabotaging them.
I think
from the inside.
I think even Alfred.
Even Alfred played him.
That I didn't even pick up on that. Like you said, you thought it was Batman. I didn't pick up on that. And then I thought this was one of those ones that was same thing, a little slow, but then it had a good payoff.
Right.
It had a good
payoff. Here's what struck me as I was reading this one, though, is that, you know, again, this was shot documentary style. It was like something you were watching on TV, like a retrospective of this guy's career. But yet, every one of these villains looks like they sat down to be interviewed in front of the camera for this TV show. It's like, who's getting all these guys to sit down and, you know, who's getting in a room with, you know, the Riddler and
right.
Harley Quinn and all these people? And it's like, hey, did you call their agent? Like, how did you get these guys in? You know, yeah. Do they have their SAG cards now? Are they going to go do movies? It just seemed really weird to me that they would all sit down for a TV documentary and talk about this guy. Basically go on TV and admit that they were committing these crimes. And,
yeah.
you know, were sabotaged. So I just thought it was a little weird. I just hoped for more from Paul Dini. You know, he's a very prolific Batman writer. you know, was responsible pretty much for the animated series and created Harley Quinn. And, you know, I was just hoping for a little bit better story from him for this book. So,
oh, all right. So that's the next story is The Batman's Design. Writer Warren Ellis, artist Becky Cloonan. Did I say that right, or is it?
Yeah, I think so. refresh me on that one, because I don't remember what that story was.
So, that one there is he goes through and he has a trap for everybody. He's studied, and by the end, he's studied the last guy, remember?
Right,
and he
okay.
says,
yep.
So he's like, D4, like almost like he's
right.
playing Battleship.
yeah, now,
and,
yeah, I remember now.
And S1, S2, S3, he's like, and then, but of course, he goes through and he says, none of these will harm them. Or they
right.
won't. They're not lethal. That's what it is.
Right.
They'll cause.
They're not lethal.
But they'll
yeah,
cause.
They're
just
to cause pain.
Yeah.
Right.
yeah. Even yeah. His medical copay for a surgery in prison will probably hurt
right.
more. I was like,
right.
doesn't even make sense.
Right.
You're
exactly.
in prison. What's the difference?
the taxpayers are already paying that bill. So
yeah. Exactly. Maybe that's what
unless
he's
it's
saying.
Unless it works different in Gotham. I don't know.
But I kind of this wasn't a story I'd write home about, but. I
right.
thought it was a fun story. Like, you're like, oh, ha, ha, you got some chuckles. But then yeah. again, at the end, I thought the last page, the way it, you know, he even says this was the one that he was worried about. I studied
right.
him. I'm not sure. It's something like he's not sure. But then he said, but then at the very end, he gets the guy to hand over the detonator.
Right.
He doesn't have to do anything. He just uses his, like, himself. And he says, "I'm like, what does he say? I'm already dead."
Yeah.
what do you?
I didn't
what
get,
do you?
I,
well,
yeah.
he's saying it's like, look at me. Like, do you want to be me? And
right.
the guy went, "No." he quit.
Yeah, basically.
He
yeah.
just said, "No, I quit."
Here you go. Yep.
I'm out. Tap
yeah,
out.
That threw me a little bit. I didn't quite understand the wrap up of that story.
Well, I think
as far as why he's saying I'm already dead, like I didn't get his reasoning there. But which wasn't, I guess, not one of my favorite stories for sure.
I think, I mean, judging by the title, his design, it seems like the whole thing was designed up until that point because he
right.
had all the traps laid out, you know, like I said, just like playing Battleship. And, but then that last guy, he didn't have a trap. He didn't have anything.
Well, right. It was
and he
more
had,
improvised
right.
kind of on the spot.
So
yes.
even with that design in mind, he still was able to, you know, stop him. And
right.
he just, you know, I thought that was really good because it was the way, you know, Batman is. And he just lured him into being so scared.
right.
Okay. The next story is Return to Crime Alley. With Leslie Tompkins.
Right. Denny
story.
O'Neill and
yep.
Steve Epting. Yeah.
Yeah.
I do have some, I wrote a few notes for this one.
All right. So what'd you think?
I liked it. I really liked it overall. You know, somehow Batman and Leslie both end up back in Crime Alley and they're, you know, as the name would indicate, they're victims of a crime. But what I thought was strange about this is that, you know, you just have basically three low-level street punks hanging around, and they see Leslie and Batman standing on the corner talking and kind of decide that it's a good idea to walk up to them and try to rob them. So
yeah.
I don't know
well,
who's walking up to Batman and saying, you know, hey, hand it over.
Well,
because
I thought the same thing. The only thing I could think is maybe he was, like, because one of them says, like, oh, look at him in a costume.
Yeah, they didn't really necessarily think it was the real
Batman.
Batman,
because why would Batman be talking to an old lady on the sidewalk?
Right.
You know, so, I don't know, maybe that's what they thought, but.
And also this to me felt like late in his career, because I don't really,
yes.
you don't see Leslie portrayed that old, usually.
No.
She was definitely an older lady, so maybe they felt like Batman was a little bit old and off his game also by that point.
yeah.
I don't know. But to me, I'm not
clearly
taking the
he's
chance,
not.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I'm not walking up to, you know, Batman. Regardless of whether they thought it was the real Batman or not, the dude's still like 6'1" and 200 pounds of solid muscle standing there on the street. So
yeah.
I'm not walking up to him and picking a fight. And obviously they had guns, and I think Batman even said, "You would dare point a gun at me," or something along those lines.
Yeah.
But what I wrote down as a note that just really struck me is that, you know, they're all wearing, because once again, they're just kind of standing around on the street corner for no reason wearing masks. Like, I guess they just were preparing for trouble that wasn't even there yet.
Well,
but they walk up to, they get into the fight, and Batman has this line that, "Did you think you could hide behind that mask?" And that really just struck me, because here's a guy hiding behind a mask.
Right.
Talking to another guy saying, "Did you really think you could hide behind that mask?" And, I thought it was a little bit maybe self-introspective, or I don't know. It just struck me as a weird thing to say from a guy wearing a mask.
I didn't get into it that deep. I liked the end where, you know, I thought it was reminiscent of the scene in Batman Begins in the prison,
right,
when the guards stop the fight and they're like, "We're not saving you from them, we're saving them from you."
Right.
And I thought that was, it was reminiscent of that at the end. But there was a particular panel that I really liked, was the scene where they showed young Bruce and his parents being shot.
Yeah.
But then over the backdrop of it was Batman, like, right, overlooking. I thought that was really, really sad, really powerful, really good picture, really good, yeah, panel. And then you have, of course, at the top corners, you have Batman and Leslie's, you know, older. So,
right.
But yeah, that picture was powerful, and I thought the ending was
yeah,
really
well,
good.
You could see even the conversation they were having before the three guys walked up to try to hold them up or whatever.
Yeah.
Was basically Leslie saying, you know, you need to kind of tone it down, because you're letting this ruin your life. You know,
yeah,
you've let this thing.
Well, that ship has sailed.
Well, right. But, you know, she's basically trying to say, you know, look, it's time to, you know, think about hanging it up, or, you know, she doesn't say those words, but you get the feeling that she's trying to convey a message that, you know, this thing is starting to really change who you are and ruin your life. And then, you know, basically, you're right. At the end, when he's taken all these thugs down and, you know, really just kind of beating the crap out of them, she yells at him to stop. And he asks her, he says, "You feeling bad for these guys?" And she says, "No, I'm feeling sorry for you."
Right.
And that's how it ends. And I thought that was, you know, like you said, it was a really great ending. And a really powerful scene there at the end from somebody that, you know, Batman really cares about a lot and trusts. That would almost be like Alfred saying something like that to him.
Right.
You know, so that's where it ends. So you don't know, like, what the next thing he would say would be, or, you know, how he would react to that, because we don't get to see that far ahead. But, you know, you would hope that based on who it was coming from, that would have an impact on him.
Right. And that's where, like you said, that, "You think you can hide behind the mask." That's the first thing he says to those guys. And that's, they had just interrupted the conversation that she was having with him about him and his, right, mask and what he's doing. And then the first thing he says is like, "Wearing a mask is wrong."
Right.
So I think that does go a lot deeper than maybe I probably first perceived it. It was a good story. Good story. This next one, Heretic, I think that's the name.
Heretic.
Yeah. Yeah. Christopher Priest, Neil Adams.
Yeah.
That. What did you think of that one?
Not one of my favorites, again. Here's what I'll say, and, you know, again, not to knock on anything, but Neil Adams was a very prolific Batman artist back in the late 60s and 70s, and was a very prolific artist for DC in general. You know, did the Green Lantern, Green Arrow series in the 70s.
Yeah.
And was really, really, I think, for a long time, my favorite artist. he's like the Brett Favre of comics now. I don't just don't think he knows when to hang it up because he's no longer that. Like, I didn't find his art to be very visually appealing anymore, and I didn't think the story was that good. So
I was lost. Yeah. It was kind of scattered. You know, it like you start Blame years ago, and then it Gotham now and New York City.
Yeah,
that was all the same story. It's like I had trouble following it, and I was rather confused with that one. And I didn't mind the artwork as much. I thought it was brighter than some of the other ones. Maybe not brighter, but it used a different color palette, it seemed.
I guess for me, just coming from being such a huge fan of his work over these last few years, he's just, to me, really lost it. And I just don't think he's as good as he used to be. You know, this is a guy now, he's been drawing comics since the 60s. So,
yeah,
you know, he's not a young man anymore. And I don't know, like, on its own merits, it's probably not bad artwork, but I just don't think it holds up to what he used to do and, you know, the way he used to be. So to me, it feels like he should, you know, he's lost a little bit and maybe should just wrap it up. So
hang him up.
Yeah.
All right. So let's move on. So we have the next one is I Know, Brian Michael Bendis and Alex Maleev.
Yeah.
Maleev. Yep.
Yeah.
See, this is why I don't do these things. No.
Yeah.
That I like this story.
I did too. It was one of my favorites in the book, actually. I really enjoyed it. Go ahead.
It reminded me of is a little bit of the letters from The Wedding.
Yeah.
In 50. Kind of like that kind of feel. Obviously not as long, and it's not a letter, but it's a kind of a retrospective type thing that that Penguin does.
Right. Well, this is basically Oswald and Bruce really at the end of their careers, right? I mean, they're neither one of them are doing anything anymore. Like, you know, Oswald is old and has hung it up.
Bruce looks like Obi-Wan.
Yeah, he's in a wheelchair and he's old and he's hung it up. You know, looked kind of like the Batman Beyond.
Yeah.
Bruce at this point. But this is basically the Penguin telling Bruce that, you know, he's known his true identity all along, how he figured it out. And, you know, what was funny is, you know, the reasoning that took place with the Penguin for him to figure out who Batman was.
Right.
Is really the things that everybody has said for the last 80 years. Like, how can nobody have figured out that this is Bruce Wayne? Because they talk about, you know, how much money it would take to be Batman. Who has that kind of money in Gotham City? What kind of guy with that money fits the build and, you know, could actually be Batman? You know, because most billionaires aren't 6'2" and 200 pounds of muscle, you know? So,
yeah,
you can cross a lot of names off the list right away. But, you know, who fits the age group? Who, you know, who's never in the same place with Batman? It's just so many things that, all should figure it out.
I guess that's what makes you the world's greatest detective when nobody in the world can figure that out. But
I don't know how that makes you a good detective. It just makes them really dumb.
That's what I'm saying. So you're the world's greatest because everybody else
right,
is
cause
really
everybody
low.
Else is stupid, right? The bar isn't set very high.
Exactly.
But what I really liked was, I guess, Penguin's, you know, so Penguin figures out that Bruce Wayne is Batman and, you know, basically says, you know, why didn't I kill Bruce Wayne? And his reasoning, I thought was really cool, is this, you know, because what if I miss? What if I only kill Bruce, but I leave Batman behind? You know, basically the only thing keeping any of us alive is Bruce Wayne as a persona. If it becomes just the Batman, you know, basically,
we're
God
dead.
Help us all. Yeah, we're all dead. So it's kind of like, I don't want to swing because what if I miss?
Right.
And I just thought that was really cool. I hadn't really seen that take before in, you know, any of the comics or iterations in the past of Batman. So, but then, of course, you know, Batman being Batman, he can't leave, you know, he always has to have the last laugh, right? So you know, Oswald's there telling him at the end, I knew all along that you were Bruce Wayne. And then Bruce shocks him with the wheelchair and says, well, I knew you knew.
Yeah, you know? Exactly.
And I just didn't care. Or, you know, whatever it was. So, once again, proving that, you know, no one puts one over on Batman. So
I love the second to last panel, then the last panel. And it's like, it's Oswald saying, like, they told me you couldn't speak anymore. Like right. That has anything to do with anything.
I know, right? Like, it wasn't that he spoke him to death. He shocked him with the wheelchair.
Right.
Speech didn't have anything to do with that. So.
Right. But
I guess he just figured, I'm finally going to get the last word because he can't talk anymore.
Yeah.
So.
And then the last panel is just Bruce saying, good visit.
Yeah.
And then the bats, or seagulls, but it looks like bats to me.
Yeah. So, yeah, this was one of my, I think one of the better stories in the book. Brian Michael Bendis did a really good job on that one. That might be his first Batman work that I know of. You know, he's been pretty much just writing Superman at DC.
Yeah.
And I don't think Batman's crossed over into the book really at all since Bendis took over. So this might be his first time writing Batman.
Oh,
and
cool.
I thought it was pretty good. Yeah.
Yeah. No, I like the story.
Yeah.
So the next one, yeah, and it does look like there are 10. A few of my markers slipped in. So
okay.
The Last Crime in Gotham, Jeff Johns and Kelly Jones artist.
Yeah.
What'd you think?
Very
colorful.
I liked the story.
Of course,
I have never been a fan of Kelly Jones's art, particularly on Batman. I think it's terrible, just to be blunt. I didn't like it at all.
This is not your favorite podcast.
But I mean, we want to be honest, right?
No, I know. I'm just kidding.
But I like the story. Like,
yeah.
You know, you kind of go through and it's, you know, you're first, you're wondering what's going on because, like, it's a whole Batman family. Some of them you've never seen before. You know, he's married
right.
to Catwoman, so that's not unusual. You know, Robin's there, and that's not unusual. But he's got basically a daughter that you
yep.
don't know who she is. And, you know, you've got Ace the Bat Hound. And it's basically they're all out fighting crime as a family. And, you know, they're all calling him Dad. And it seems pretty lighthearted and really happy. You're kind of wondering what's going on in this story because it doesn't really fit with Batman. And then the title of it, The Last Crime, so it looks like they're solving, you know, the last crime in Gotham. But then you get to the end and it's Batman, like, just blowing out his birthday candles. And my interpretation was, like, this was his wish.
Right.
You know, before he blew out the candles. So, you know. Then it becomes kind of a sad story, you know, I thought at the end, because, you know, he's wishing for something that he's probably never going to have and that he really wants. You know, he's never really had that happy, you know, happy family life. So,
right.
I thought it was kind of sad, but it really wasn't one of my favorites as far as the art goes.
Yeah, I kind of felt the same. I didn't mind the art as much, but it wasn't one of my favorite stories. But yeah, the same thing at the end. I felt like almost like that whole family thing was, that was his wish, like you were saying.
Right.
And then at the end, you just see him sitting there alone. Alfred, you know, happy birthday, sir, and walks off, and he's
right.
just sitting there.
Right.
Kind of sad. This next one, The Precedent.
I'm guessing you're going to say this was your favorite story?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, no. And I didn't mean to say no like that. Like, no, that couldn't be the furthest thing from the truth. I liked the story. Why would you say this was my favorite?
Well, because I highlighted this one as being one of the best. And
okay.
And when you said, you know, one of these stories was your favorite Batman story.
Yeah, we only got a few left, so.
Well, this is the one I thought of that.
Yeah.
You might think, which now I know which one it was, but
yeah, but you don't know why. I don't think you
know
why.
Knowing what's coming next, I know which one it is. But I know I really like this story.
So did I.
You know, it was kind of basically again. You get the feeling early on. You know, they had just taken Dick Grayson into the house after, you know, he had his accident, or his parents, you know, had the accident and died at the circus.
Yep.
And it's basically just Bruce and Alfred debating the merits of bringing Dick into this life. and you know, what it could be, what he could be.
I love the title,
the
precedent, because he was the first one.
Right. So it's a little misleading in that you think that the precedent is that it's all about Dick. And, you know, we're going to set a precedent by bringing, a young person or another, you know, a kid into this life. And then, you know, it feels like I've been doing the reveals for all of these. So if you want to kind of
go
reveal
ahead.
The end.
Go ahead. You're so good at it.
Well, you know, and, you know, I really liked that they both sort of held Dick up to a higher standard, like that he could be what you're not. He could be better than you. You know, that he would be a hero forged in the light is what Alfred says, I believe, rather than you who were forged in the darkness and in, you know, heartache and things like that. And that he could be the best of the bunch. And then, you know, while they're debating this, you know, young Dick swings down from the chandelier and, you know, obviously they didn't know he was there listening to this whole conversation.
Right.
And he kind of flips down, sits in the chair and says, you know, this train's already left the station. You can't stop it. I'm already involved. He said, but I'm not the precedent. You are.
Right.
And I thought that was really cool. But it was one, like I said, I really enjoyed the story. James Tynion wrote it, and
it's so much fun to hear you struggle.
Yeah, Alvaro Martinez Bueno is the artist. I've never heard of him before, but I liked the art a lot. Like, I really liked the art in this story, so I look forward to seeing this guy some more. And he may have done some other things, and I just don't recognize the name. But I really enjoyed all aspects of this story, and I thought it had a great kind of moral to it. So,
like you said, with the precedent being flipped there in the story, getting to the art part, did you notice that in those panels when they were showing Dick, like maybe he was up on the chandelier, but the window behind Alfred, super bright, like almost sunrise,
right.
Bright, you know? And then when almost all the panels have a bright light in them, and then the very last panel or page is that, you know, the bright light, and at the bottom it's got Batman with and Dick, and they got their hands up like a hand on the Bible, hand in the air type thing,
right.
Making an oath, and then the two of them in costume above with the bright light, and it's like, and that's Dick is the light and Bruce is the darkness. Right. And it was like, that's the balance of the two of them. And I thought it was what a great story in such a short period of time. That's like literally four pages.
Yeah. It wasn't one of the longest ones for sure, but it just had a good punch, you know, right there at the end and all the way through. I really liked it.
Yeah.
You know, they basically, I liked how, you know, they said, you know, he'll have ups and downs and romances and this and that. And, you know, they showed him with Starfire, and they showed him, you know, throughout his career. Basically, they were projecting ahead all the things that we know have already happened in the past.
Right.
You know, of what this guy was going to be. So, like I said, I really liked it a lot.
Yeah. So, the next one. What was the name? I don't even see what the name of it was.
It's just the Tom King.
Tom King. Oh, Batman's Greatest Case?
Yeah.
That one? And then, yeah. This one here, I thought, this was my favorite story.
Okay.
Yeah,
well, it's up there for me, too. I really like this one, also.
But the reason for me, I'll get into in a minute, but the story itself, I thought it was funny. With all of the Bat family and the conversations that they were having, and it's like, it's me, isn't it? And it's like, I died. We all died. It's like, it was funny. They were all nervous. They're like, what are we doing here? All meeting on the rooftop. But,
I really like the banter between, Dick and Damien. you know, talking about who's the world's greatest detective, and, you know, Dick thinks he's, you know, up there. He doesn't think he's the world's greatest, but he thinks he's top three. And,
right.
And Damian says, you're the 11th greatest detective. And he says, well, at least I come in above Ace the Bat Hound. And
yeah.
Damian says, oh, we're counting Ace. That makes you the 12th.
Right. So, that makes you 12. Right.
I just thought that was really funny. You know, you have Batgirl saying, hey, you know, I used to date the guy, so you think you have it bad.
Yeah.
You know, look what I had to put up with. And I just thought it really reminded me of a family, you know, like siblings that grew up together and, you know, would pick on each other. No, obviously, you know, siblings don't have relationships with each other. And,
right.
Yeah, unless you're Luke and Leia. But,
well, I like that. I kind of want to make out. No.
Yeah.
Just a little bit. How do right. you make out just a little bit?
Like, if I show you, will you let me? Which was that? Who was that? Jason? No, not Jason. That was Tim and spoiler.
Yeah.
I can't think of her name. Stephanie.
Stephanie.
Yeah.
And it's like, I like this question. If I show you, is that an answer? No.
Yeah.
Maybe. But yeah. I like that conversation going along with, like, the other ones.
Right.
You know, and some of them are serious, like, what's going on? You know, obviously, Jason, he's like, everyone knows this is about me. It's just, but then all the while you have, you know, Bruce going to the tomb.
Right.
And but you still get their conversation.
Right.
So you get that dreary look of that him at the tomb. Of course, it's raining. And then there's still some humor in that.
Right. You're reading all the banter going on.
Right. You're reading the banter. Exactly.
Well, and it was all them. Right. Because, you know, this is Bruce had obviously called them all together to meet on this rooftop. And none of them knew the reason why.
Right.
And that's really the setup for the whole thing. And then he gets there and, you know, I think Jason at first, he's like, well, it's because I did the thing, right? And do you know what the thing is? Oh, you don't know what the thing is? So I guess it wasn't the thing. And,
yeah.
You know, it really turns out that, you know, Bruce just wanted them all to pose for a picture.
Right.
Which I thought was weird.
Well, see, I loved it. And it's like you open up to that full page and the only one speaking is Batman. And he goes,
right.
Geez.
Yeah.
It's like, he's the only one. He's like, geez. But everybody's there. It's a great picture.
Yeah.
Ace.
Yeah.
His eyes are wide open. And then the last panel was him that – or. The last page has him taking that photo to the tomb,
right?
And he puts it at their feet. Right. So, and it's all wrapped up in that the one thing that he couldn't, that, you know, that he lost when his right. parents died was a family. And then you flip back after reading this and look at that page, and you're like, he's created what he lost,
right?
And
right.
that
there is family.
Yeah, that to me was like. That was huge in itself. But right. the other part for me was I was never a fan of any Robin after Dick.
Right.
Because I grew up, like when we were kids, there was other Robin.
Right.
So to me, it was like in the, what, 80s that they started making other Robins. And then, you know, so I was kind of out of it by then, not really following week to week with the comics. And I'm like, oh, there's another Robin.
Right.
And now this story here brings it all like, oh, I, for something that I thought most of my life was pretty hokey. And I actually come to really like Damian.
Yeah.
I love them all, but this really is like, oh, instead of being a hokey story on how to get you to read more Batman comics, it turns out it's like this story here wraps it all up into something that Batman was trying to accomplish all along.
Right.
Which I thought, that's why I think it was one of my, it is one of my favorite Batman stories because it takes something that, it ties it all up like that.
Yeah.
So. All right. And then we get into.
Well, before we get into the last story, just what I wrote down a story, I just wanted to comment on. No, it's fine. But. You get the sense before you go forward that this was the last story because then the next three pages are just pinups, basically,
you
know, done by different artists. But I just wanted to comment on the one by Amanda Connor because I really liked that that image of Bruce kind of sitting, you know, it looked like he was kneeling on a, you know, the top of a building or whatever.
Yeah, it's like on a gargoyle thing.
Yeah, and it's like just kind of like the ghost of his parents behind him, like reaching out towards him. And I don't know, it just struck me as, I really like that image, so I wanted to mention that.
Yeah, that is nice. It's
something that I enjoyed in the book, so.
Yeah, her pearls are like almost like a constellation.
Right.
Yeah, that is nice. That is nice. All right. So, yeah, the last story, which I guess is going to be to lead us into 1001.
Right. Well, the last story is the relevant one. We got it was pretty much the same thing with Action 1000. You know, the last story was the Brian Michael Bendis story that was going to lead us into, you know, 1001 and, you know, the Man of Steel. And this is the same thing. This is Peter Tomasi and Doug Mankey. And they've been doing, you know, they did the last story arc in Detective. And, you know, obviously they're staying on the book going forward. So this is the story that matters as far as, you know, going this can have relevance going forward.
Right.
So I don't know. What did you think of it?
I really liked it. I like where it's going. I'm actually excited for 1001. I love the art.
Yeah, I do too.
I love the art. I love the writing, but I don't know how they can keep this up. be honest. Well, yeah, I don't think 1001's going to look like this. You know.
So we meet, I guess, medieval Batman or the medieval knight.
The last page.
We're not really quite sure who he is. Because, you know, this whole thing is being narrated by somebody, and you don't know who the narrator is until you get to the end, and it's this medieval Batman. But, you know, this is obviously somebody that views Bruce as not being a hero and doing things the wrong way, and, you know, this is the guy, I guess, that's going to come in and do things the right way. So it reminded me a lot of Azrael, you know, just from the little bit of story we got here. You know, this seems to me like this is a character that's going to be, you know, consider himself righteous, and but is going to find himself at odds with Batman and the way Batman operates. So I hope it's not just like Azrael in that storyline, but that's how it felt like to me. But that being said, I am really excited to see where this goes going forward, because I liked the writing and I loved the artwork. I liked the descriptors of Batman throughout this, that this guy was using. So
I like that they gave you a what seems to be a sympathetic villain.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you can relate. Like, he's not wrong.
No, and that's the whole thing. Everything he said was you could agree with.
Right.
You know?
And that's like, those are the best villains that you look at and go, uh-oh. So, yeah, and I'm hoping that they keep his identity a secret, similar to Batman's identity.
Yeah, at least for a while, yeah.
And we get that thing we've been looking for, is that detective part.
Right.
And Batman will be trying to figure out who, you know, medieval is or whatever. But yeah, I really like this story, and I'm really looking forward to 1001, 1002. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
It's going to be fun. So, all right. Is that it?
I think so.
That's the end of the book.
That's the end of the book. So,
anything else?
So, well, I was just going to say, like I said, you know, we talked in the beginning about how we thought it had its ups and downs. So hopefully, you know, if you've listened this far, you know, you see where we were coming from, at least on what we liked and we didn't like. But, you know, obviously everybody's going to have a different take. So something that we didn't think was great might be your favorite story. So, I think overall it's definitely, you know, it's worth the $10. I'd go out and pick it up. Because there's a lot of good stuff in here, so.
Yeah, and I have my multiple copies, multiple covers, enjoying those. All have the same stories in them, though, I checked.
Yeah, yeah. And wasn't any extra pages in the other ones?
No. I was hoping.
Yeah.
But, so, on the other topic, getting back to earlier in the podcast, listening to you and Slade talk.
Uh-huh.
That was awesome. I wanted to get back to that. And okay. That's why I like going to these stores and getting to talk to people like yourself and Slade and other, and everybody has a different area of, like, knowledge. Yeah. Some of the other stores, they're not as, I know one of these other stores, they don't know the same stuff you guys know, but it's, my point is like, go to your stores. Talk to the people behind the counter. Talk to the people in the stores. That's what I'm doing. And it makes this so much more fun. That's what this podcast is about. That's what, we, you know, we started off with one mission and, or an idea, and it's evolved into this. Because that's what people wanted. They were like, oh, you guys sound like people in a store. Okay, cool. And that's what people want. And it, from talking to all the stores, that's, they need people coming in. Like, right. People like yourself, you're like, you just want more traffic. You keep these stores in business, keep these stores busy, keep buying these books, and just go out in your store and hang out, especially on Saturdays. It's a blast in there.
Yeah.
When people are off. But, yeah, that was awesome listening to you guys. And I can't recommend it enough for people to get out and just start talking. It's a blast. So, thanks.
Yeah.
Anything else from you, or are we done?
I think we're done.
All right. So let's thank Friendly Neighborhood Comics for letting us hang out here all night long.
Whew. Yeah.
It's dark. They turned the lights out on us. It's quiet now, but they left us alone. Right. All right. So thank you, Friendly Neighborhood Comics in Bellingham, Mass. It was awesome. We had a good time. And everybody, there was some prizes given away. People answered some fun questions, like, what was one of the ones we heard? Who is Batman's natural born child? I was like, okay, who doesn't know that? Know. Yeah, exactly. I'm like, you can't be at a midnight and not know that.
Yeah.
So, all right. So, Detective Comics 1000, what stories did you like? Were we wrong? Was there anything we missed? I don't think we missed anything, but hopefully. Hit us up on Twitter at @thebrightside_chat. Email us at thebrightsidechat@gmail.com. Yeah, you can find us on iTunes, Google Play, Spotify, Facebook.
Facebook.com/brightsidechat.
Nice. And that'll do it for this week. I will announce on Twitter what we're doing next week. I don't know yet. Any ideas? Right.
No. I'll be seeing Shazam the next day. So yeah. I don't know if we want to. Obviously, we'll do a little precursor to that, but probably not the whole show.
Yeah, we won't do a deep dive into it. We'll talk about it afterwards.
Yeah.
All right. So we'll see you next week. Hit your stores.
Take care, everyone.
Hey, Fred. And then you can start. And I can edit from there?
Nope.
You're ready to get right into it?
Yeah, I'm a professional.
Oh, sorry. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to laugh that hard.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening to The Bright Side Chat. We have a few sponsors that we'd like to mention. Arkham Comics and Games of Pearland, Texas. You can find them at arkhamcomicsandgames.com, one word. A. Pennyworth's Comics and Collectibles in Matthews, North Carolina. You can find them at apennyworthscomics.com. Apothesis Comics and Lounge in St. Louis, Missouri. You can find them at apothesiscomicsstl.com. Friendly Neighborhood Comics of Bellingham, Mass. You can find them at friendlycomics.com. Legends Comics and Games of Littleton, Mass. You can find them at legendscomics.com, comics with an X. And also Rubber Chicken Comics of Bellingham, Mass. And you can find them at rubberchickencomics.com. So what's cool is all of our sponsors have agreed to give our listeners a 10% discount on any comics we talk about in our podcast. So if you hear it in our podcast, just go into any of the stores that we've mentioned and tell them you listen to the Bright Side Chat and you heard about this comic there, and they will give you a 10% discount on any of those books. Hopefully you guys can take advantage of that, and thank you to all of our sponsors. Thanks for listening.